And welcome back to Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. We are so excited for this episode as we have a very special guest. The head coach of Duke University, Marissa Young, will be joining us later in the episode talking about her team this year, coming straight from the World Series last season. We'll get to know Coach Young and her team a little bit more a little later on in this episode. But first, a couple highlights and quick hits from things that happened around the ACC this past weekend. And we'll start first with our first ACC series, Georgia Tech and Stanford. Wild weekend down in Atlanta. Stanford would win the series, taking 2 out of 3 games from Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech would take the first game from Stanford, winning 5-4. They had to come from behind, though. Kylie Chung looked great through 4 innings, no earned runs given up, and then she gets taken out of the game. Georgia Tech came in and jumped all over the next 2 pitchers to come from behind and win 5-4. In game 2, though, score was 16-12. Georgia Tech threw 5 different pitchers, which is pretty typical of Georgia Tech. They are definitely a pitch by committee team this year. Stanford threw 3 arms. I mean, if you're going to score 28 runs in a game, you're going to have to throw some different arms. But Georgia Tech saw a 6-run lead taken away in the top of the 7th when the Cardinal put up 8 runs. There were 7 combined home runs that game, 12 walks, and somehow that game finished just under 3 hours. In game 3, Kylie Chung back in the circle through just over 6 innings was terrific, and Stanford would win their first ever ACC conference series in Atlanta versus Georgia Tech. So I guess this is the first official welcome to the ACC for Stanford. Game 1 didn't go how they had planned, but they did walk away with a series victory. And then we'll go down to Tallahassee, Florida State, coming off of the disappointing matchup last week against A&M when they dropped the 2 games in that doubleheader. But Florida State, their offense was there this weekend. They went 5-0 against Florida Gulf Coast twice, Mercer twice, and College of Charleston. All of those victories coming in run rule fashion. They scored 61 runs on the weekend. Crazy amount of offense. And Issa Torres and Kennedy Harp are still, at this point in the season, a month in, hitting over 500. Now, this weekend, they do not go into ACC play. They are taking a cross-country trip all the way out to Oregon, where they'll face Oregon State twice and the Ducks of University of Oregon twice. And then Virginia, we're going to talk about pitching here because Eden Bigham threw the first perfect game for the Cavaliers since 1994. It's been a long time coming for Virginia, but she was able to be perfect against Hofstra. They went on to go 5-0 on the weekend, and 4 out of their 5 games, they scored at least 11 runs, and in the 1 game, they scored 8 in a run rule victory. So Eden Bigham was perfect against Hofstra. Their offense was there all weekend long. They will go this weekend. Very excited for this opening, the real opening ACC series weekend. So we'll have multiple teams playing. That they will go to Blacksburg in the Commonwealth Clash against Virginia Tech. So that will be very exciting. Another exciting mentioned for a pitcher was from Virginia Tech, and Emma Limley, a no-hitter against number 24 Liberty in their midweek game this past week. And that is her third no-hitter of the season, with 2 of those being perfect games. And we're just a month into season, and to have 3 no-hitters, man, I am so impressed and so excited. And say it again, that Emma Limley is having an outstanding senior campaign so far. Virginia Tech would go 4-1 on the weekend. They would beat Villanova 18-2 in the first game of that doubleheader, but then they would lose the second game to Villanova 6-7. Excuse me. Tell you what, that's quite the turnaround for a team to win 18-2, then come back and lose 6-7. I don't know what happened there. Sometimes it just happens, and I think those are one of those games that the coaching staff is not happy about, but you can't put too much into what happened there. But they would go on to beat Penn State, JMU, and Radford. And like I said, they will take on Virginia this weekend in the Commonwealth Clash. Another big win this weekend, this past week, was from Clemson. They beat top 10 Georgia in their midweek 5-3. And I tell you, Clemson has had to fight for every win they have. And I think I said it last week that it's going to pay off in some of these big matchups that they know how to play when they're uncomfortable. And that showed this past week when they took down Georgia. They were behind and had to come back. Georgia was behind and came back and tied it. And Clemson was able to fight through and get some big runs. Julia Noller is still hot. She had a home run. The freshman Macy Cintron was very productive at the plate with an RBI. And Alex Brown is still hot, going 2-for-4 with an RBI. This past weekend, they continued to roll, went 4-0. They have 3 midweeks this week. They have Furman tonight, which is Tuesday, and then a doubleheader on Wednesday against Charleston Southern. And another big matchup that I'm really excited to see is they have Duke coming down to Clemson in their first ACC matchup. I know McWhorter will be rocking. That stadium always is, but once you get a big-time matchup like this, it's going to be even more electric down at Clemson. Not so fun weekend for the Blue Devils, though. They had South Carolina coming in for a 3-game series, which I love that scheduling before you start ACC play. Bring in a solid, powerful 4 team for an ACC matchup feel with a game on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And they dropped all 3 to South Carolina. South Carolina, I do need to mention, is one of the 2 undefeated teams in the country, the other team being Oklahoma. So South Carolina is off to a very hot start. But I will say that Duke didn't really look like Duke. They had some issues in the circle that we're not used to seeing, not able to find the strike zone, not making those little adjustments. There's more wild pitches than I've seen all season. Their offense was clicking. Amina Vega, I mean, my goodness, she's just been terrific. But, you know, I just think they have some things to clean up, and we'll get Mercy Young's thoughts on it later in this episode when we get to sit down and talk with her. But it's always important as a team to know that you didn't lose playing your best. And I think Duke can definitely walk away knowing they didn't lose playing their best ball. There'll be some things to take away from it. And at least it's not May, right? At least we are early in the season, and this is the time to learn and challenge yourself as a team. And without further ado, we are so excited to welcome head coach Marissa Young, fresh off a World Series appearance and an ACC championship, the 3-time All-American selection, the 2002 Big Ten Pitcher of the Year, the 2003 Big Ten Player of the Year at the University of Michigan, and in her 7 years at the helm of Duke, she has compiled 265 wins, 3 straight Super Regional appearances, won the ACC twice, and all that in just 7 years. So sit back, relax, let's hear from the amazing woman and coach, Marissa Young. Hey y'all, welcome to Up the Coast. We have a very special guest with us today, Coach Young from Duke. Coach, thank you for taking time to meet with us. I know mid-season, really getting into things. It's a busy time, but we are very grateful, beyond grateful to have you here. I want to take a second and look back because we can't forget what happened last year and what you did for this program and your team making it to the Women's College World Series for the first time. And for you, coming in, starting a new program, you always said you had this vision of taking your team to the World Series. It's no longer a vision. You made it happen. How did it feel leaving Oklahoma City and looking back at last year?
It really was a dream come true for me as a coach, but just to see the immense joy on my players' face and their families to live out their childhood dream of getting there and playing on that big stage. And obviously we left hungry for more. We got there, but we weren't able to pull off a win. And, you know, there's a saying above one of our locker room exit doors that says, "Today for June." And it's a reminder to our players every day that all the work they're putting in, all the blood, sweat, and tears is so that we can be one of those teams playing in June. And you know, we were there, but our season ended the last day of May. And so we still haven't accomplished that goal. And so this group is really hungry to learn the lessons of where we came up short and apply that to Team 8 and hopefully truly become one of those teams that is at the Women's College World Series, having success and playing till June.
Coach, so much of the World Series is about the experience, of course, the performance on the field too. Did it feel like it did this past year, like it did when you went as a player?
It's grown and exploded. It's even greater than it was for me as a player. And just to see the investment in the stadium, the facility, the city, the people that come out, the television coverage, the amount of little girls standing on the side waiting for autographs. And obviously for me, having the support of all of our alums who are still very young and early on in their career of life beyond softball, coming back to support our program, it really was something special.
Those alumni, I love the shirts, Marissa, last year. That was awesome. Your alumni, they showed out at the ACC tournament. We got to spend some time with them and they were awesome. Just going off of the World Series now that you've been there and Duke's on the map, you've been on the map, but now it's like, hey, these expectations for Duke are there. How are you managing those for your players and this team?
We talk about pressure being a privilege and they know that there is an X on their back and the expectation to show up every day and play to a certain standard. But I think that they embrace that and they play with a chip on their shoulder and know that even though we've accomplished a lot of success, Duke still has to fight tooth and nail, you know, to be considered one of those top perennial programs year in and year out. And so that's the goal, is to continue to play the best competition, to challenge ourselves, and to have that sustained success.
Cool. Taylor and Olivia are both now named associate head coaches for you. And what made you feel like it was time to recognize them with that kind of title?
They're just love and support and commitment to me and the program is second to none. And both of them have had significant opportunities to go coach elsewhere. And their loyalty, again, to me and to the program is just incredible. And I think that obviously last year, me having to step away and our program not skipping a beat and continuing to thrive under their leadership is definitely something that, you know, was testament to them and proof that they deserve to be associate head coaches. And I want that recognition for them. They take on a lot of responsibility in the program and I want to continue to mentor and guide them and empower them for their future careers as well.
Yeah. We want to talk a little about Parker too. And I know Britt was probably about to say that. But even just on Taylor and Olivia, can you tell me a little bit about how you keep really good talent? Because I do think that it's very common for really good, strong head coaches to lose really good, strong assistants to other promotional opportunities.
It has definitely been a challenge for me over the years. You know, I've had great assistants that come in and they're here a couple of years and we have a lot of success. And then they get opportunities to go be head coaches elsewhere or to move up, you know, to other Power Five programs. And, you know, I want that. As tough as it is for me to have to start over with new staff, part of coaching is developing people. And that goes beyond my players. It is really about the coaching staff as well. And so I enjoy seeing them grow, get better, take on new roles and bigger responsibilities. But Taylor and Liv are special, and I'm really thankful again for their loyalty and commitment. They know we have a great thing going, and they want to keep helping me take this program to new heights.
And as a player, when you see your coaching staff really have that special bond, really, I just know it as a player that you trust your coaches even more. So I think that's something really special. And part of a coach's responsibility you mentioned is scheduling. We were looking at your schedule this year. It's impressive. And I remember last year with the selection committee, and I know Alex and I got on ACC Network and said some things about their seeding, but they always pointed, you know, strength of schedule. I think you have not given them that argument to make this year with who you're playing and being on the road. What was kind of the mentality when you made this year's schedule?
I think some of it is within our control of what tournaments we're going to, but who you get matched up against at those tournaments is not within our control. And I think that that has been something that's happened in the past. For me, a lot of where we choose to go is really more about the location and providing our players the opportunity to go home to play in front of their families and friends. Obviously, for me to go to Florida this year to have the only weekend to see and play against my daughter was important. And so those are all factors, but we want to play the best and be challenged and tested early on in the season so that we get that postseason feel and get that experience under our belt. And I think it's also tough projecting what players you're going to have, you know, in the program when you're scheduling a year or sometimes 2 years in advance with your schedule. But it's been a great run for us.
Let's talk a little bit about you competing against your daughter. Do you feel like you had the full scouting report, or is she getting better now that like, she's also being like?
I really tried hard not to cross lines with her in that of let her do her thing and, you know, me treat her like any other hitter or opponent. And obviously as the mom and me seeing her journey as a freshman, you know, she's fighting and clawing to get her way into that lineup. You know, a part of me is like, I hope she gets a hit, but the competitor in me is like, no, we got to get her out. We got to get the win. But no, she's definitely gotten better under Tim and learned a lot about, you know, the college level and scouting her opponents. So it's really fun to hear those conversations that she has now as a college player.
So cool. You're better than me. I feel like I'd have been like, can't hit the rise ball. Let's go.
Just wait till you have kids, Alex. Just wait. And it was so perfect. It was on Valentine's Day and Cass and your daughter played together. And Cass is like, she's like my sister too. So it was a big family affair and your family was there. It was really special to watch. And another thing that I thought was special was your team's response after game one. It came out, didn't go the way you wanted, but then you came back and got your revenge in a big way leaving Gainesville. What did you learn about your team when they came out in game two after getting beat in game one?
Yeah, we got beat in game one pretty badly. And, you know, you had the choice. We told them the choice to decide how you want to respond to that. And they didn't take any time feeling sorry for themselves. It really was about learning what adjustments we need to make moving forward to be able to beat and compete with a team like that. And, you know, super proud of them. Sunday was a tough day. It's the end of a tournament weekend. The game time had changed twice. We sat around all day at the hotel and waiting to see if and when we were going to play. Flight changed, you know, all the things to be able to get to that game. But I knew they wanted to play. They wanted another opportunity to get at them. And they competed right from the start. And you could tell it was going to be a different outcome.
Yeah, response is everything. And we've seen you guys really battle tested, I think, and how well you guys respond is just a testament to the leadership and the culture that you've built. And I know it doesn't come lightly when you're the first ever coach at a program. And I mean, I guess I don't know because I've never done that. So it's really cool stuff to witness. Talking about culture, program, success, I want to talk a little bit too about the transfer portal. And I know it's not easy for you to get transfers because of how strong the academics are also at Duke, let alone the expectation of talent. So can you talk to me just a little bit about who you picked up in this season and what kind of impact they've had on the team?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been, I mean, recruiting in general is difficult for us for the academic standards. And so we tend to have a small roster to begin with. Transfers are very difficult because of the academic standards. And so we have to be in that transfer portal. And it's really like trying to find a needle in a haystack of who's going to be the right fit academically, but then also who can compete and help us. And, you know, this year being able to pick up KK Mathis from James Madison, who has added some power to our lineup, has been tremendous. Tessa Malulu from UCLA with her World Series experience and the versatility that she has, giving us the depth that we didn't have last year in the infield, has been really impactful. Obviously, we've been able to move everybody around in the infield because of the addition to her at third. And then Jessica Oakland, who's there's no words to describe that kid for the power that she has and her presence. I mean, even though she's not eligible to play with our team this year as a mid-year transfer, just having her at practice and around the team has really elevated everyone around her. And so there's so many games where you look down, you know, the line and you're like, man, I wish I could put that kid in the game. But I'm really excited for the future to know we're going to have her for the next 2 years.
You mentioned your infield getting shifted around. Now Jada's at first and Anna's at short. Is it true that Jada's never played first base before? And how did she just, you know, how was that transition for her? Was she just ready to accept the role and dive in? What was that like?
Yeah, she has not ever played first base. I mean, she's been a shortstop all of her life, played a little bit of second. And she's just, if you know her, you know, there is no doubt that she would make a jump anywhere for this team. She is such a selfless leader and that person that is willing to do whatever it takes. And obviously Anna had experience at short, and we were looking for somebody who had great glove work and great footwork around the bag. And so with a couple of, literally a couple of days of practice, Jada was like, I'm going to do this. And she has embraced it wholeheartedly. I think the leadership that she had at shortstop and being that vocal leader and being able to command the field, she still has that at first base. And so she is a calming force for our defense. And I'm just so thankful to her attitude and coachability to be able to make that jump for us.
I feel like we call ourselves fans a lot of the time. Obviously, we're fans of you guys. We're fans of Cassidy Kurd. She's phenomenal. We're fans. I love Amina Vega. I do love Jada Baker too. I got to work a camp back before they reported back in the fall in Orlando because they're from kind of that Central Florida area. So great kids, great people, great young women. Tell me a little bit about, we've watched some other interviews and stuff that you've done, and you talk about being a Michigan woman and what that meant to you. So how are you trying to instill those same values into your program now?
Yeah, I think being a Michigan woman for me was really learning to be selfless and understand that everything is about the program and the legacy that I wanted to leave behind, and being able to instill that here at Duke. The girls are very selfless, great teammates. I think our culture is definitely our strong suit and what has allowed us to have so much success in starting the program. And these girls, just watching them grow from girls to young women has been favorite part of the job for me. But we just have so much fun together. There's a deep love and appreciation for one another. And, you know, they have all grown tremendously in who they are and what they're going to do in life after softball. And there's just, I couldn't say more about them. They're incredible people on and off the field.
Well, last year they called themselves the Free Swaggy Dogs, and we love that. We did some barking with them. But this year, you know, you have an idea of what your team is in January, but you don't really know what you have until you start playing other competition. How would you describe this team, and what have you learned over the past month?
You know, the fall took a little while for us to figure out what this group's identity was. I think, you know, we had a big senior class departure. We had a lot of new additions. And so we really gave them the time they needed to settle in and figure out who they were, what they were going to be, and what was going to make them unique this year. And I think it hit us around January as a coaching staff that this group really, really loves to be challenged. And so if practice wasn't super intense, or there wasn't a, you know, difficult drill where we think they wouldn't have success in, they would kind of coast. And so we've learned that about them, challenge them in big ways, and that's when they show up to be the best.
Let's take a look back, I think, at more like history. So we're approaching the 10th year that you will now have been hired by Duke. Of course, we're on team 8. Is it true that time really does fly when you're having fun? Does it feel like it's been that long that you've been there now?
No. Every day I'm like, were you guys here when this happened? They're like, no. I'm like, really? It felt like just yesterday. It does fly by, but I really do cherish, you know, every player that's come through this program, every coaching staff and support staff member that have helped build this thing from the ground up. And yeah, I can't believe how fast it's gone.
There's a social media trend going on right now. If you are or are not versed on TikTok, I'm a fan of TikTok. I'm not versed in TikTok, but it's called I Had Coffee with My Younger Self. And it's people looking back and reflecting at like that teenage or young woman type of self, and then kind of looking at where their life is now and saying, hey, all those stresses and worries and fears that you had back then, like they don't exist anymore, or they're different now, right? What are some of those things that you would tell your younger self?
What I would tell my younger self, I think, is to slow down and enjoy the journey. I'm such a competitor and a perfectionist and really tough on myself to get it right and be perfect and, you know, accomplish all the goals. And sometimes you can get so hyper-focused on those things that you forget to slow down and enjoy the time with the people around you. And so I feel like in the last few years, I've really embraced that, do less and enjoy more with those around me.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do.
And I don't know how you've gotten through some of what you've gotten through from the outside looking in. Like, it's admirable. And in one of those same interviews, you just talked about time and how there's nothing more precious. And I think we've seen that firsthand too with your family.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, just talking about back to softball this weekend, didn't go as expected or as you wanted, I'm sure, but thankfully, you say your team wants to be challenged, and this certainly could be a challenge for them to learn from. Now you have ACC coming up this weekend. You have Elon tomorrow. But after this weekend, what did you say to your team? What was the message?
The message was, you know, it hurts, and it's not something you ever want to go through. But I'm glad we are experiencing this now than later. I think as a coach, you're always wondering how tough your team is until stuff hits the fan, right? And you don't become close as a group. There's not really that trust until you go through adversity. And so this is the opportunity for us to go through that now and become better because of it so that we can move on through ACC play and hopefully into the postseason in a better place because of the lessons we learned through this weekend.
Three-ish more months left of what's going to be the 2025 ride, hopefully ending in OKC, all of us. And so what do those goals look like? What does that journey hopefully look like for you? We talk about the process. So what is that process?
I think we learned most this weekend that what it means for us to show up as the best version of ourselves. And I've just felt like there were too many moments this weekend where we questioned the plan, we questioned how good we are, we questioned the what ifs instead of just going for it. And so that's what I asked of them, is to go back to having that unwavering belief and confidence in themselves and each other. We've beat some of the best teams in the country. There's no reason to doubt yourself when things get difficult. And so I'm confident this week we're going to, you know, get a few more days of practice, which we haven't had in our 12-day road trip, some practice at home and be able to take a deep breath and get back to being ourselves.
You mentioned your road trip really had a great performance out in Palm Springs and in Florida. I mean, your road trip went well, I would say. And you mentioned, I heard that you love being on the road because that's where you make those core memories and interact and build those bonds with your players and the people around your program. Is there any fun or memories from the road trips this season that stand out to you?
This group never stops. I mean, it is never a dull moment, whether it's karaoke on the bus. They played several games with us by the poolside in Palm Springs, which, I mean, how often does your schedule work out where you get time by the pool? Never. But belly flop contests, I mean, they are just truly silly, fun kids at heart. And we just have so much fun. Dance competitions, you name it. This group is a blast.
Yeah, we got to see some of it on social media, and Brittany and I were like sending it back and forth and cracking up. So whoever manages your social media, your guys' marketing is really good because it looks like you guys have an absolute ball, and I'm sure you do. So it's very good storytelling. Who has the best dance moves on the team? You can include yourself in this as well.
Well, you know, we have some that think they can dance and sing. the rest of us would think otherwise, but I just love their free spirit and the courage to throw it out there. Kyrie Rodriguez is always on one, and Amina Vega thinks she can sing, but our ears tell us otherwise. The true voices are Amaya Burgess and KK Mathis. They can really sing. And then Tessa Maulu plays the guitar and the drums, and she's the one that does most of our team vlogs and is just really talented behind the camera. So they have a lot of fun.
One of those vlogs, I was actually at the game that you played Mississippi State and got to see y'all play, and Cass picks up the ball when she's warming up, the fair ball. And it's hit down the line, it's fair, but Cass is warming up in foul territory in the outfield, just picks the ball up and casually throws it back into the infield. And I mean, it was a big ordeal at the moment, but it was so funny that they put that on the video. I loved it.
Yeah, that was one of those moments I was like, I can't believe this just happened. And all she kept thinking about was, coach is going to be so mad at me. And what can I say at this point? I mean, it's just no words.
It's good sportsmanship, right? She was trying to be a good person. But
way to hit your relay.
Yeah, right? Right? Just wrong team, Cass. Wrong team.
That was great. She can be a doctor, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think she can sing it and everything else, and then Cass thinks she can play outfield. Maybe. Gotta believe it first, right? Coach, I just have one last question. I want to kind of reflect on just your life, your time as a player, now as a coach. Obviously, I didn't know this until recently. We're ACL sisters. I tore my ACLs my first 2 years of college. Didn't know you tore yours your freshman year as well. And I really do tell people it was the worst time of my life in the moment, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I feel like it literally shifted and shaped so much of my mindset and my like tenacity now, even as an adult. So tell me a little bit about your journey as a player and all the hardships and stuff and how they've molded you now into the woman that you are and leader.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think there's a lot of things in my life that have happened that in the moment you wish didn't. But as you get older and able to reflect, I see them as opportunities for me to connect with my players and, you know, be able to say, hey, I'm with you. I've been in your shoes. So I'm thankful for those opportunities to really sympathize and empathize with what they're going through. I think as a player, you know, I dealt with a lot of adversity that wasn't talked about in that time of, you know, going across country from California to the University of Michigan and dealing with that life transition, having a great freshman year as an All-American, and then having ACL surgery and having to deal with the mental aspect of, will I get back to ever being myself? And, you know, the pressure that you put, you know, you've experienced that of getting back out there. And so, yeah, just to have that journey, to have that grit and mindset to keep going and achieve success as a 3-time All-American was really special. But I know that as a player, it wasn't my talent that allowed me to have so much success. It really was my work ethic and my mindset. And so those things have transcended to my coaching career of being able to push and develop kids that maybe don't have the athletic abilities that they can do it in other ways, and challenging their mindset and, you know, how we go about the process is really important. So player development is a big aspect because I feel like that's what I needed as a player. And obviously as a mother, you know, mother of four, I think I'm raising all the kids the same, and to see how different each one of them are and what they need is so different. It was really eye-opening to me. And has definitely helped me be a better coach because I recognize that in my players of, you know, what their, how their birth order impacts them and, you know, what their fears are and what their strengths are. And I feel like I can connect to them a lot different and in a deeper way as a mother than before I had kids. So I love that.
Coach, I just want to take a moment and tell you how much I admire you as a coach, as a mom, as a wife, the things that you've been through and the strength that you've showed, and hearing your players, even when your husband was fighting for his life, that when you were there for them, they knew you were there. You were present every single day. And, you know, I've just been watching this play out from afar. It's just truly amazing and just shown, you know, you can be a mom and coach softball at a high level. You've just been an inspiration to myself and so many people. So I want to thank you for that. How is your husband doing?
He's doing
out
well
in Florida, right?
Yeah, able to get out a little bit. And we've got one more hurdle to climb of, you know, seeing if we can save his feet so he can get out of that wheelchair and walk again. But, you know, just having him around and able to be there for me and for the kids and still, you know, experience those wonderful milestones is definitely a blessing. And now, you know, Coach Liv just had her first baby. And so we've got another coaching mom on staff. And for me to be able to help guide and mentor her in this process is huge. And like you said, you know, we want more women in this game being able to coach and have a family and do it all. So a lot of good things on the horizon.
And last thing is, you put something on social media about Duke Health Hero for Hope. We're going to put this in the description, the link where people can donate to the Duke Hero for Hope. Could you kind of describe what that program is?
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband had to have a heart and kidney transplant, and we waited several days for him to find a match, which, as you can imagine, when you're fighting for your life, every hour feels like an eternity. And just to know that there are people out there that are willing to make that gift of life to other people and other families to give them hope is really special. And so we want to continue to advocate for that and spread the word so that people, individuals, and families can think about that in their toughest, darkest moments when maybe they've lost their loved one, to know that they can impact another person, another family, and their, you know, whole community in so many ways. So Hero for Hope, Duke Community, and their life organ donation is doing a really great job, and we want to continue to advocate for that.
Amazing. Thank you, Coach. And we know your time is very valuable, and we appreciate you spending it with us. And we will definitely be rooting for you guys. We love watching you compete, and good luck the rest of the season. We will be seeing you sooner than later. And we just really appreciate your time and everything that you're doing for the sport, and just being a strong leader, a woman of just power and faith and encouragement. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ACC.
Let's go.